The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we're digging into Eric Larson's The Demon of Unrest. And wow, this book takes you right into, well, arguably the most intense period in American history.
It really does. It's such a powerful look at those crucial months. Right before the Civil War kicked off.
And Larson asks this really provocative question, doesn't he? Could the Civil War have actually been prevented? Okay, let's unpack this, because his argument is pretty stark. He says the war was not inevitable, not at all.
No, he frames it as this tragic result of specific human failures, bad decisions, personality clashes.
All crammed into just 154 days, barely 5 months.
Exactly. November 1860 to April 1861. And focusing on that tight time frame, it really strips away that feeling of, you know, oh, it had to happen. It makes the whole thing feel much more urgent.
And relevant for today, right?
Absolutely. It's kind of a warning showing how fast political norms can just collapse, how fragile democratic institutions can be when leaders start putting sectional interests or ideology above holding things together.
It's like a case study in how crisis spirals out of control.
Precisely. Once that momentum starts.
Okay, before we get into that countdown, let's talk about Eric Larson himself. He seems like the perfect guide for this kind of story. People know him for making history read like a thriller.
He's a master of it. He comes from journalism, Columbia J School background, and he just has this knack for taking really dense, complex history, think A Devil in a White City or In the Garden of Beasts, and making it utterly gripping.
Accessible, yeah. High stakes.
You feel like you're reading it unfold in real time.
And that approach, what he calls narrative nonfiction, feels particularly vital here. Why is that?
Well, a lot of academic history kind of treats the Civil War as this foregone conclusion, right? Like it was bound to happen. Larson pushes back hard against that. He digs into thousands of primary sources, letters, diaries, telegrams, to give you that sense of contingency.
Contingency, meaning it could have gone differently.
Exactly. The people living through it didn't know the ending. He makes them human again. You see how everyday feelings, pride, fear, ambition, just misjudging things badly, how those were the real forces driving events towards catastrophe.
So it's less about abstract forces and more about character under immense pressure.
That's it. He's studying character in crisis.
Which explains the laser focus, just those 154 days. Lincoln's election, November 6th, 1860.
The first shots fired at Fort Sumter, April 12th, 1861.
Yeah.
Really does feel less like reading history and more like, I don't know, a political thriller playing out.
A countdown, almost claustrophobic.
That's a good word for it. Larson really wants to show that big wars don't just spring out of nowhere from abstract ideas. They're the result of an accumulation. Thousands of small decisions made by fallible people. People working with bad information under incredible stress.
And if just a few key moments, a few decisions had swung the other way,
the whole thing might have been avoided. That's the haunting possibility he leaves you with.
And the way he structures the book really helps build that tension, tracking things happening simultaneously.
Yeah, you've got these parallel tracks. You're in Washington, D.C., watching President James Buchanan just flounder, completely out of his depth as a lame duck.
Then you're out in Springfield, Illinois, with Lincoln. He's trying to figure out how to even be president, planning this incredibly dangerous trip to Washington.
And then, crucially, you're right there in Charleston Harbor with Major Robert Anderson and his tiny garrison, basically trapped inside Fort Sumter, right at the flashpoint of secession.
So all these pressures are converging, and Larson labels the result the demon of unrest. What exactly is that demon? Is it just politics or something deeper?
I think it's deeper. It's not just polarization. It's like this toxic brew of rigid ideology, wounded pride, really disastrous miscalculations on all sides, and this national slide into almost a kind of psychological terror, hysteria, maybe.
A spirit of division that just takes on a life of its own.
Yeah. Once it's unleashed, it's incredibly hard to put back in the bottle. It moves beyond anyone's rational control.
Okay, let's walk through that timeline. Starts right after Lincoln's election, November 1860. He wins, but it's a really fractured victory, isn't it?
Totally fractured. Less than 40% of the popular vote.
Yeah.
And crucially, zero support from southern states. That's not exactly a strong mandate to start with.
And South Carolina doesn't wait.
Nope. Leaders there start planning secession immediately. And Larson points out this this fundamental disconnect right away, this massive miscommunication.
How so?
Well, the North mostly just dismisses the secession talk.
Yeah.
They see it as bluster, you know, political theater. They think the Southern fire eaters, the extremists, are just bluffing. They won't actually do it.
All the South has its own delusions about the North.
Exactly. They see the North as too focused on business, too materialistic, maybe too cowardly to actually fight to keep the Union together.
Both sides just completely misreading the other's determination. Catastrophically wrong.
Which brings us to President Buchanan. Oh boy. Larson does not hold back on his leadership failure in those critical months before Lincoln could even take office.
He just seems paralyzed. Was it fear? Or was it a genuine legal bind he felt he was in?
Larson portrays it as paralysis, yeah, but rooted in this very narrow legalistic thinking. Buchanan genuinely believes secession was illegal. He said so. But at the same time, he convinced himself the federal government had absolutely no constitutional power to stop a state from leaving.
So, illegal but unstoppable. That doesn't make sense.
Right. He trapped himself in this contradiction. And the result was this huge power vacuum. Extremists on both sides just rushed in to fill it. The crisis turned into, well, an unstoppable tide, partly because he did nothing.
And you see the consequences clearly in the attempts to find a way out, like the Crittenden Compromise. They all failed.
Yeah, and that failure is key to Larson's whole argument about the war being avoidable. Those compromises fell apart, mainly because the key players, especially Lincoln and his Republicans, felt they absolutely could not back down on limiting slavery's expansion.
That was their core principle.
It was. And compromising on it, they felt, would betray the voters who just elected them. So they chose, you could say, political principle or positioning over immediate national unity.
That's a really tough spot. Prioritizing a long-term principle might seem right, but Larson suggests it just poured fuel on the fire at that moment.
It definitely accelerated the crisis. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Lincoln's still stuck in Springfield, trying to get ready for this nightmare job.
And his journey to Washington. Larson makes that sound like an absolute ordeal.
It was a 12-day train trip. Huge crowds cheering in some places, sure, but also facing incredibly specific, credible death threats. To the point where, you know the story, he had to sneak into his own capital city in disguise.
Wow. Talk about an undignified start. It just instantly showed how deep the crack in the nation really was.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So by March 1861, Lincoln finally gets inaugurated and, boom, he inherits the Fort Sumter trap.
The ultimate no-win situation.
Totally. If he abandons the fort, he basically legitimizes secession, makes the Union look weak. But if he tries to reinforce it with troops, that probably starts the war right there.
And poor Major Anderson is stuck in the middle. A Southerner, but loyal to the Union, running out of food, surrounded by hostile forces in Charleston Harbor.
And this is where you really see Lincoln's character emerge under pressure. He inherits this absolute mess, but he doesn't panic. His approach is careful, methodical.
What does he decide?
Well, after weeks of just agonizing debate within his cabinet, he settles on a very specific plan. He'll send an expedition. But, and this is key, with only food and provisions, no troops, no ammunition.
Just supplies.
Just supplies. And crucially, he decides to inform the governor of South Carolina beforehand. Tells him exactly what's coming and why.
Okay, letting them know in advance. That really shifts the moral calculus, doesn't it?
Completely. It was a brilliant move, really. It put all the pressure, all the responsibility onto the Confederacy. If the Confederates let the ships come in peacefully with food, well, that kind of undermines their whole claim of independence, doesn't it? Makes them look like they aren't really in control.
But if they fire on ships bringing only food.
And they are undeniably the aggressors. They start the war by attacking what is essentially an unarmed relief mission. Lincoln ensures the first shot, if it comes, won't be from the Union side.
And the Confederates, under Jefferson Davis, they chose the confrontation.
They did. They felt allowing the resupply, even just food, would make them look weak. Perception was everything.
And so the order goes out.
Yeah. The book builds to that moment. Mm-hmm. That first signal mortar shell arching over Charleston Harbor at 4:30 in the morning, April 12th. And Larson includes that unforgettable detail. The honor of firing one of the very first shots was given to this old Virginia extremist, Edmund Ruffin, a real fire eater.
And after 34 hours of bombardment, Fort Sumter surrenders. The political crisis is over.
And the military conflict has begun. The demon of unrest is fully unleashed. And again, the point Larson hammers home is that this wasn't fate. It was choices. Human choices and terrible miscalculations.
Which leads right into the big themes that still feel so relevant. What are the main takeaways here?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is the fragility of democratic institutions. You see how a system built for compromise just broke. It broke because too many leaders put partisan gain or regional pride or ideological purity ahead of just keeping the country stable.
It's a scary thought that following the rules, respecting the process, can actually be a weakness when your opponents decide they're just going to throw the rule book out.
It really is. And related to that is the dangerous power of miscalculation. We talked about it, but it's everywhere. Buchanan miscalculated. The South miscalculated the North's resolve, thinking they were too materialistic to fight.
And the North miscalculated the South's determination, thinking secession was all just a bluff.
Yeah, these mutual blind spots just fed on each other, creating this terrible spiral upwards towards conflict.
And the third big one.
I'd say the failure of political moderation. The whole political climate, the incentive structure, ended up rewarding the loudest, most uncompromising voices. The fire eaters in the South, radical abolitionists in the North, moderates, people like Senator Crittenden trying to find middle ground, they were completely sidelined. It shows how polarization can kind of feed itself, you know, it pushes everything to the extremes, unless there's a real active effort to hold the center.
The book is also packed with memorable lines or ideas, that central metaphor itself. The demon of unrest had been awakened, and once awakened, it would not easily be put back to sleep. That just lands with a thud, doesn't it?
It really does. It captures that sense of momentum, of things spinning out of control. And I was struck by that idea about character, too.
The one about crisis.
Yeah. In times of crisis, character is not revealed. It is created.
Meaning the pressure actually forges who these people become. Their choices under fire define them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not just showing who they always were. It's actively shaping them. And then there's the way Larson sums up Lincoln's tightrope walk.
His strategy, yeah.
Paraphrasing a bit, but basically. Lincoln's huge challenge was to act decisively, show strength, but also project patience, to uphold the government's authority without being the one to throw the first punch.
That captures his genius, that patient strength.
It really does. And one more, just the insight into the Southern mindset, partly through Mary Chestnut's diary, this sense of almost chilling gaiety when discussing war. This romantic notion of conflict, totally disconnected from the brutal reality of what industrial warfare was about to become.
That disconnect feels like a key part of how it could happen.
Definitely fueled it.
Okay, so pulling this into today, how can we apply these lessons from, you know, leadership or just navigating our own polarized times?
Well, first, there's crisis leadership.
Mm.
Look at Buchanan's paralysis versus Lincoln's careful, methodical approach. The lesson seems to be, you need to act, yes, but balance that with flexibility. Don't lock yourself into a course too early. Keep your options open.
Avoid those irreversible commitments until you absolutely have to make them.
Right. And then there's dealing with modern polarization. The book is a playbook for how the fire eaters operated, using propaganda, using raw emotional appeals like fear and pride to just swamp rational argument.
We see echoes of that today, for sure.
Absolutely. So the lesson is vigilance, isn't it? Being aware of those echo chambers, questioning those really emotionally charged narratives that just want to paint the other side as monsters, it takes conscious effort.
And finally, maybe something about institutions.
Yeah, understanding institutional limits. Larson shows pretty clearly that the existing constitutional system back in 1860 just wasn't equipped for that kind of existential breakdown. So for organizations today, maybe even governments, it means you have to plan for scenarios that go beyond the normal rules. You can't just rely on the rule book when you're facing challenges or opponents who've decided the rules don't apply anymore.
That's a sobering thought. So wrapping up, what was the thing that surprised you most or the biggest takeaway for you from this deep dive?
For me, I think it really drove home that lesson of contingency, just how avoidable the war truly felt as I was reading it unfold day by day. It wasn't some abstract historical wave. It was the sum total of individual choices, fears, mistakes.
It actually gives us a sense of agency now, doesn't it? Knowing that our choices matter in shaping the future.
Exactly. It puts the responsibility back on us.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think for me, it's the enduring power of that phrase, the demon of unrest, that psychological threat, the division, the suspicion, the hostility. It feels like a permanent resident in democratic life. It's always lurking. And keeping it contained, keeping it from being fully unleashed, requires just constant work. Vigilance, like you said, but also empathy, and leaders willing to look past short-term wins for longer-term cohesion.
Well said. It's a constant struggle.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.